You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Yo, welcome back. I got my producer extraordinaire, Sabrina Sith. You know what I'm saying? Got Amir on the ones and twos. We in the building on a lovely Tuesday in March. We back at it, man. Make sure you drinking your water. Make sure you drinking your water, man. All right? This is my 9th gallon. Wait, what day is this? 8? Mm-hmm. This is my 8th gallon. 8 gallon in 8 days, so this is my 8th gallon that I'm working on. I'm having a great time. I already noticed changes in my body. I don't know if it's a combination of the water I've been drinking and the workouts and the fact that I kind of cut back on my sugar intake. So I think those three things, I'm starting to see like little differences. So I feel like I'm getting back in rhythm now. And we're doing a challenge. 4 gallons of water a week. No fried food, as in deep fried. No sweets, as in added sugar, anything. So you can still have your fruit, your honey, your agaves, but natural sugar stuff. But you can't have added sugar sweets. And you got to go to the gym 25 days this month. The gym. The actual gym, not working out in the backyard with some Russian dudes and a random bear in the background. That's a video I've been meaning to do a voiceover on. So it's some dudes in Russia hanging on some tree branches doing workouts, and the bear is behind them rocking the trees. I'm like, what's going on in Russia? Shout out to everybody that's affected by what's going on in Russia and the Ukraine. If you have any family members or anything like that, my heart goes out, of course, prayers to you and your family or your friends or your loved ones, to anybody affected by the Russia and Ukraine situation. Just wanted to throw that out there, get that in the mix, get that going, and letting you know that, you know, I care about what's going on. So there's that. Shout out to my blue and white family. They came out to Tacoma and gave me this hoodie. It's a Phi Beta Sigma hoodie. I appreciate y'all for coming out and showing support. The love in Tacoma was amazing. It's like, you know, I really appreciate the love that was shown and given and extended. It was almost a fight in one of my comedy shows. I never told you the details.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because I was like, what happened? And then you faded out, and I was like, well, go to sleep. Also, I think I forgot.
So, we're having a show in Tacoma. Nate Jackson's Super Funny Comedy Club in Tacoma, Washington. Fantastic comedy club. If you live in the area, make sure you pull up. It's a good time, great energy, great staff. And it's just a good time. They get the top-notch comedians. It's a black-owned club and one of the few in America. And if you get a chance, make sure you support and go to Nate Jackson's Super Funny Comedy Club. And they take good care of the comedians. And he's a comedian himself, so he gets it. Friday second show. It was a rowdy crowd. Like the energy was just you could taste the energy on this show. They were super excited to be there. They was on 10. The love was shown and felt, right? So much so that one guy, he kept throwing 20s on the stage as I was performing. So he would throw a 20 up there. He'd be like, man, and he would get back up, throw another 20 up there. And I'm scooping it up like a dancer at the strip club. I'm like, yes, I'm shoving it in my little shirt. You know, I'm scooping up the tips, okay? He's just popping up, man, you love you, dog, 20. And I'm just like, yes, yes.
Yes.
I'm scooping it up. I'm putting it in my cheeks, whatever the case may be.
I love that.
So, so this is going on throughout my set, right? He just throwing a 20 up. And then it started matriculating other people throwing cash up on the stage. So it was just getting out of, but he would just pop up when he felt like, whenever the feeling hit him, he would pop up with the 20. And so, mind you, he's at a table with other people. So apparently the dude sitting at his table, so when this man, and this is a tall man, big, you know, big black dude. So apparently the guy behind him is just tired of him popping up. Because it's like, he was low-key interrupting the show. It was like, and I think when he, I was doing an extended bit with an act out, and he popped up on that. And so it was just like, you know, he kind of messing up the rhythm of my routine. And so dude apparently just got fed up over there. He was just tired of this dude popping up in front of him, ruining the whole show, you know. And so by the time I noticed what's going on, the dude was like, man, what's up, man? Let's go, man. Sick of this, man. Let's do this. And I don't know what was said in the exchange. I'm sure he said, hey, man, can you sit down? Man, I'm going to do what I want. It's probably that type of energy, maybe.
Yeah.
But by that time, the dude was riled up. He's like, man, what's up then? Let's do it. Let's go. And I was like, yo, nah, man. Hey, come on, y'all. Nah. And I'm just on stage like, come on, man. Hey, go to the other side. Sit on this side. Nah, man, we not doing that here, man. Come on, man, sit on the other side. So what ended up happening was the dude that was tipping big left the venue, him and his girl. So apparently they was pretty drunk or whatever. And the dude that was fired up, that was flared up, he was just like, my bad, man, my bad. It was just, you know, my bad. You know, he sat back down and just enjoyed the rest of the show. And I was just like, yo, it almost... The fisticuffs.
That's crazy.
He might have socked the 20s out of that man. And I would have scooped up them 20s.
I was going to say.
I would have still scooped
up. He would have made 20s. It rain with a punch.
Man.
That would have been great.
They was tipping in Tacoma.
Yeah.
Because he set off the trend of tipping. And then this one girl came up and put 100 on the stage. And I was like, yo, man, let me tell y'all something, man. Let me tell you something right now. The love shown was just... amazing. I was just like, man, it just would have sucked if they really would have broke out in the fisticuffs. Would have messed up the whole vibe. And I'm a type of performer, man. It's hard to get me off the stage. Like, yeah. I'm gonna give you your money's worth. I'm gonna continue the show.
Mm-hmm.
In San Diego one time, these dudes got into it right at my feet.
Oh yeah, they got into it
right at my feet, man. It was just like, it was a show. The stage was low to the ground, so I'm even with the people watching the show. And the dude kept talking. He tried to come up, and I was like, "Man, what you got to say, man?" And I handed him the mic. Not handed it to him, but just put it up to his mouth. He tried to take the mic. I was like, "Nah, say what you got to say." And then the dude in the front was just like, "Man, shut the fuck up, bro." He was just fed up. He was fed up, and he was like, well, what you want to do? And then they started scuffling, and then they fell right at my feet fighting. I'm still standing on stage. I'm like, oh, man, it's going down. I was going to continue the show, but then Moses was like, all right, y'all, show over. It's hard to get me off the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Even in Virginia Beach this last year, the fire alarm went off, and I stood on the stage the whole time until they got everything figured out. And the club going to have to blow up before I get off the stage, before I give up. Because y'all done spent your hard-earned money, y'all done got babysitters, y'all done drove, you done put gas in the car, you done got an outfit, you got your outfit together. So I take that very seriously. So I'm like, yo, I'm giving you your money's worth. So, you know, and the comedy club was like, man, you know, a lot of comedians would have just left after a minute or two. That was dope that you stayed up there. Because the fire alarm was going off for a while, and I was just like, yeah, man, I ain't going nowhere until y'all tell me, until the fire marshal shows up and be like, everybody needs to get out. It's a real fire. Then I would be like, all right, just take it outside and finish the show outside.
Mm-hmm.
While the building's burning up. You know what I'm saying? But that's what happened in Tacoma. So that's what the fight was about.
Yo, can we normalize tipping?
Oh, comedians? Man. The tips.
Because
tips was coming in strong.
I feel like
nothing less than the 20.
That's dope because performers deserve it. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot to entertain people, especially as a comedian.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like comedy's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Tip your local comedian.
Tip your local comedians, man. If they make you local, laugh, throw the tip up there.
Especially your local comedians.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because they are going through it.
For
tip
sure.
Your local comedian 100% because they are yeah, they are going through it.
I remember the first shows I ever done where I got tips is at this place called The Family Room in the hood in L.A., near Athens Park in L.A. And there was a show there at this venue called The Family Room hosted by the very funny Henry Coleman. Henry Coleman, even though he gets on my nerves as a person, you know, I got my issues with him as a person. Comedically, he is one of my favorite comedians to watch. I think he's absolutely hilarious, and I'll never take that from him. But, and he also...
It's still on site for me.
But. Oh, yeah, yeah, I feel that. also, he gave me an opportunity early on in my career to host the pre-show of his show at the Family Room. And so this room is super hood, and it's like, yo, it smelled like fried chicken wings in the venue. It's like one of those. Like the actual venue itself, it looks like a Midwest basement, but it's not in the basement. But that's the look. And so if you're funny, they throw the money on the stage. So you up there, you trying to kill it so you can get them tips. You know, you smell the chicken wings going, the tips are coming in. And so you just doing this. And so that was the first time I actually got tipped on stage. Hood room, you know what I'm saying? A lot of comedians can't handle that type of tough crowd, but I learned a lot, man. So I'm grateful to Henry Coleman to this day for that. But that was my first experience with getting tipped as a comedian. You know what I mean? One of my patrons said, bro, you gonna start doing bachelorette parties for that change? I mean, you know what I'm saying? If it's a good environment for comedy, sure. Why not?
I will be your manager. I'll be like, ladies.
Yeah.
you would think I'd say, above the waist, please, ladies. But I'd be like, man, just do whatever y'all
just
do.
Put the money with.
Do whatever y'all want. Just make sure you tip them.
Yeah. Tips, man. Tips, McGee.
Tamara asks, so Chris Rock and Kevin Hart are doing headliners only show together. If you had to choose any comedian to headline with, who would you pick? If you had to do a show, let's say, four besides yourself, four headlining comedians, who would you choose?
Four?
Yeah. I added that part just because.
Oh, so we adding three more comedians.
Yeah.
So we doing like a Kings of Comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Outside of my crew.
Headliners. Anybody who headlines in your crew can be respectful.
No, because it's just going to be easy to go with the crew. So I'm going to make it more interesting and go with other headliners that, you know, that you haven't seen me with already. Mm-hmm. So I'll do that, make it more interesting. Because I'll easily be like DC, Keon, you know, but Kev. So I'm going to go outside of my circle and go with Roy Wood Jr.
100%. That'd be 100%
amazing. 100%
Roy Wood Jr. 100%.
Roy Wood Jr. I would be honored to, you know, do a show with Damon Wayans.
Oh, yes.
I would be honored. And then I'm going to go with, I'd be absolutely honored, too. You know what? I would love to do. I'm gonna take Damon Wayans out.
Oh shit!
I'm gonna leave the super legendary out because he's a legend to me. So Sinbad, Damon Wayans, I'm gonna just leave them out. So I'm gonna go Roy Wood Jr., Sebastian Maniscalco.
Man.
And the fourth comedian I would love to do like a four-man or woman show. Let me throw in. Damn, man, it's tough. This is a tough one. I'm gonna go with Bill Burr, man.
Oh, that's a good one.
Goddamn Bill Burr. That's so Bill really Burr, good. Warwood Jr., Sebastian Maniscalco, and me.
What's dope about that lineup is that none of y'all are the same.
That's what I try to tailor the show around. You know what I mean? It's always a better show for me when you got completely different perspectives from the comedians that you see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a better flow overall. Like, that's the type of show I would like to see. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
That would be insane.
We'd do that.
I feel like everybody would walk away with such a headache.
Man, that's a good-ass time.
You would need to have, like... You would need to have some sort of like strip performance in between each comedian just so people can calm down and be like, all right, together, let me, okay, all right.
Because laughing a lot really does give you a headache.
It does.
In the back of your thing here, just be hurting. You'd be like, oh, I'm gonna laugh. Cheeks hurting. Like you really can't laugh yourself out.
Yeah.
And just be done.
Yeah.
And so, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Before I get to the topics, let me tackle one of the questions from last week or the previous weeks. Not a P. I asked this on Daddy Issues, but you missed it. Do you remember the first time you were recognized by a fan for comedy? Do you remember when your kids realized you're famous? Honestly, the first time I was recognized for comedy was actually before I even did stand-up. It was I was at a Common concert in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Me and my brother Scott were there. And this girl comes out the crowd. She's like, yo, you're hilarious. And I was like, huh? She was like, I saw you host that talent show at NMSU. I was like, oh, thank you. And her name was Lauren. We're still cool to this day. Lauren really implanted the seed in me in that moment of just like, man, maybe I am like really funny. Because when I was doing stuff on campus, I was hosting everything because I worked for the Department of Black Programs. I was outgoing, anything involving anything. I hosted. Yeah, I host, you know, and so... And my goal wasn't to be funny. It was just like, I'm hosting a show. I'm going to keep it moving. I'm just trying to entertain on stage.
Do you feel like you were hosting a lot to get used to talking in a crowd since you were in the acting mentality, like being an actor? Or were you already used to speaking publicly? Like, were you already, not used to, but like, did you have no fear of speaking publicly?
You know what it was? I think it was, because at that time, when I first went to college, I was like, man, I really want to do film.
Yeah.
So it was like, I was already making what they call Instagram or Vine skits or whatever, TikTok video, whatever you want. I was doing that in 98. Mm-hmm. So I was making little funny horror movies or just doing like little skits of the life of Squilly before he turned to drugs. It was just like, and we were just passing it around campus. So it was just like, man, I really want to be a filmmaker of some sort. So when I started working for the Department of Black Programs as a work study, you know, I was just really tapped into the social aspect of college life. So anything that was going down, like, oh, we doing a pageant, we doing talent shows, we doing this. I was like, you know, I'll host, you know, because I had the, you know, and this was prior to me doing theater for the first time. This was before theater. And so... And I never wanted to do theater. I was just like, man, look out. And so I was just getting more comfortable being entertaining just on my own personality. And so I ended up winning the pageant that I had no clue. Like, I ain't winning this pageant. I ended up winning. Mr. Black NMSU.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, damn, okay. Personality. So that in that moment, that's when I feel like I was recognized for being funny. Like on a you know, show type vibe. Even though I technically wasn't a comedian then, that was the moment. Other than that, I can't really remember the first time I was recognized for being a comedian. Because, you know, that moment with Lauren in Albuquerque at the Common Concert, that's what stuck with me to this day. And then when the boys saw me get recognized, dang, I can't remember the first time. Because, you know, they were always with me, you know, around town. I remember Serene saying, man, dad knows all the women around here. And that was because we were in Vons, or one of the grocery stores. And this one lady that worked there was always nice to me. And so, and then I had the other lady that worked in the food department at Albertson's, older Black lady. She reminded you of like a Southern mom, was just like, you could tell she was hood, but she mm-hmm. was very like warm and friendly. And, you know, we would always chop it up. So, and I store hopped a lot. So I would go to Albertson's to get this, and I would go to Vons to get this, which I still do.
You still do.
And so Serene's with me, and he's just like, yo, man, dad, you know all the women. I was like, oh, you know. And I was just like, well, you know, I had nothing. But so it was in those little moments where I think they were just kind of seeing, like, you know, dad knows a lot of people, and, like, you know, as my I guess fame started to grow, they would see sometimes people just come up, man, you funny, I love your videos, this, that, and the third. You're like, man, dad out here blowing up. So they would say stuff like that. But I don't really remember the first time, but there were definitely moments where they were on the scene and seeing people, you know, recognize me and, you know, take pictures or whatever, and they just like, man, you know, that's crazy. Like, you know, because to them, I'm just Pops. But so, yeah, they would definitely see those times. I'd be like, man, you know. And I would feel like, man, you know, I'm actually working towards something. It's mm-hmm. working. Mm-hmm. And that was a good feeling. And then to see the pride from your own children, it's like.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it was just like, ah, it's yeah. good feelings, guys. Good yeah, feelings. Yeah,
they're all about, they were all, they're all in.
Yeah.
I wonder if Serene adapted that. Because you can tell that around women, his energy was very charming and, like, mm-hmm. you know, sweet, and, like, you could just you just see, yeah. like, okay, this is a good kid,
right?
You know what I mean? And very respectful and very, like, and, you know, even afterwards, there was a lot of, like, older women that came out to support and stuff. That yeah. were like, man. I loved him, and I was like, oh, that's like,
yeah.
you could tell he had a good impact on
yeah.
on every woman he's ever encountered.
Ida was telling me that, you know, he would, you know, respond to her stories and in the DMs and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And he's like, man, how you doing? I see what you're doing. Like, you know, encouraging her and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I was just like, that's dope. So she would have, like, conversations with him via yeah. Instagram. I was mm-hmm. just like.
Yeah, when I was looking through our text yesterday, I was just mm-hmm. like, man, like, we were just chopping it up
yeah.
about nothing and everything. And right. it was just like, it was just dope. Like,
yeah.
It was just, it's easy. It was just always so easy to talk to him. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if he saw that in you, because you're easy to talk to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't care what people bring up. You'd be like, all right, let's go with this conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't judge. You're not like, well, that's weird. You might say it later, but
yeah.
not out loud.
I usually only say that if I feel like, they're disrespectful in a way.
Yeah, well, that's different.
That's when I'll be like,
that's different. Yeah, like, why would you say that?
That's weird. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And so those are the only times I'll just be like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if.
So, yeah.
And wait, and not like, sincere is great.
Yeah.
He's amazing. But I feel like he's not as like quick to spark up the conversation. But you have the conversation, like once you talk to Sincere, he'd be chopping it up. He's a little charmer himself.
Yeah. Like once he gets comfortable in the flow,
yeah,
he's all in. But he said, you know, he'll tell you himself he has social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but once he gets comfortable and into the rhythm.
He's just like me.
Yeah.
It's so funny that Virgo.
It's a good time.
Yeah, because I got social anxiety, but when I'm comfortable around you in person, try to shut me up.
He be singing. Oh. He always sing. Sincere is Sing McGee.
He be singing.
He'll come around the corner. He'll come down the steps. He'll get in the car, already singing the song. He'll be looking dead at you.
Mm-hmm. He'll be like, with a serious face sometimes.
Feels like summer. And looking dead at me. And I'm just like, and a lot of times I won't know the song. I'm like, man, what's you singing?
Uh-huh. My favorite thing to do when he's home is bust into his room and just start dancing.
Yeah.
Like, not say nothing. And I'll just start dancing. He'll just start dancing.
Mm.
To no music. And we just be dancing. And I'll be like, all right, I'll talk to you later.
Yep. And I'm just like, so it's interesting to see just like how, you know, the similarities I see in my own children. Like, you know, I sing all the time. So does Sincere.
Yeah.
You know, the social aspect that me and Serene shared is just like, you know, and, you know, Serene would just get fed up with his friends just like I do. Just like, man, you know, he gets frustrated and be like, man.
Yep.
Same way. So it's just like, man, to see the similarities in your children. So it's like, all right.
Yeah.
You know.
I definitely see you in them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. Cause especially like in the beginning of our relationship, I would, you know, like I always told you, my favorite thing is to watch you be a dad.
Yeah.
And so when I watch y'all interact, I'm like, look at that. They doing the same thing at the same time. Probably don't even realize it. Look at them scratching their head at the same time. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It'd just be like little things or like little mannerisms or little like just the way y'all react to things. And I was just like,
yeah,
it's hilarious. Isn't that crazy? Like how you just pass pieces of you to another human being.
I marvel at that all the time.
It's insane.
Good and bad.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think about that all the time. It's just like, you know, because I know I have traits of my mom, you know, we the same, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like pretty dope to see. C-Dub 716, are you guys buying Kanye stem player? I think I might get that.
Oh.
I like how you can isolate every part of the track. I like that. So it's kind of interesting to me.
Oh.
So I might eventually get one. You know what I'm saying? Why not? Why not dabble in it? It looks like fun. So, baby, I'm not 100% on if I'm getting it, but I'm thinking about it for sure. Not a P. What are the bad traits? Bad traits for me, these are my bad traits. I procrastinate. I am a procrastinator. If it's something that I don't really want to do, it'll take me a long time to get it done. My punctuality is a bad trait, which Serene had in spades. Mm-hmm. Serene also procrastinated. What else is a bad trait? I was flirty. I was a cheat. I don't know if that trickled down to the boys. I don't know. I don't know. But it maybe, you know. Bad traits. Sometimes I don't think I'm as stubborn as the Zodiac makes me out to be in terms of, you know, set in, oh, I'm going to just do this just because. If it can be make sense to me, then I'll be like, all right, you know what I'm saying? I'll give it a try. I'll try this new thing. I'll try. I am stubborn to change some things, and then once it's changed, I'll be like, I like this. You know, so I won't normally be like, man, put it back the other way. What are some of my... Sabrina brought this up the other day. I'm a deflector.
Oh, man.
So I deflect. That could be good and bad, though. I just deflect compliments, and I deflect when the heat is on me, if it's something... I don't want to hurt somebody's feelings, I'm deflecting. If I feel like the pressure's on me, I might deflect. If you talk about me too much in a good way around other people, I deflect. It's I'm definitely deflection, McGee. What else? You say cheese don't count? It's Larita, man. What else?
I will say about your stubbornness is that it's not in a like an everyday kind of thing. There are certain things that you, I also think you're a, what's the word? Subconscious stubborn individual.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're making progress on things and you think you're, you know, doing this, that, and the third mm-hmm. mentally.
Yeah.
But then outwardly it's like, no, you're not really, you know.
Like what?
Like letting go of certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like our conversation that we had the other day about like resentment.
Yeah.
It's like. Like, you're stubbornly holding on to that, even though subconsciously you want to let it go. I mean, not subconsciously. Consciously, you want to let it go. But subconsciously, you're holding on to it. You know what I mean? And then it's like...
I think I own that, though.
No, you own it. That's what but I'm saying.
I don't think I'm making progress.
No, but you talk about it as if it's going to happen, but stubbornly... It doesn't.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's different though.
That is different. But it's still a stubborn a stubborn trait. And
Absolutely.
Also like another stubborn thing is the argument between the group chat that you had the other day. And you just being like, man, forget y'all. I'm out of here.
That's not stubborn,
own.
That's impatient. That's a negative. I'm impatient.
Yeah, yeah.
That's impatience.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, I don't have to deal with this.
Yeah.
That's when you're ready to quit at a moment's notice or just like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And so that's impatience. Yeah. And that's another trait where it's just like, you know, I don't have a lot of patience, especially now. Like, you know, Serene's death has changed me. So it's just like, I really don't have time for shit that don't really mean a lot in the moment, in the grand scheme. Mm-hmm. So I'll just be like, I don't have to deal with this. So I'm out. So that's another one. Not impatience to where, you know, I cuss people loud or it's just like, I'll walk away. We out, you know. But yeah, those are some of the negatives for me. I could be a bit of a loner. When I don't want to be bothered, I can be like, you know, I just don't want to be bothered. And, you know, that could hurt people's feelings. So that could be a negative trait. Or it might not even be a negative trait. It could just be
human.
How I am, you know. It's nothing personal a lot of the times. It's just, you know.
I'm glad that you never had to tell me that. Because I feel like we often have our own. Like, we come together, I'll give you a hug, and then I'd be like.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to be over here with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm glad that you've never had to be like, man, go away.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I go away on my own. Because we're both like that.
Mm.
We both like to be in our own world. And
yeah.
Like, and then, you know, we have our, obviously we have our time together. Hello, we're together.
Mm.
But for the most part, we be in our own realms doing what we doing. And like,
yeah.
And I think that's just, it's healthy and it's a like when you're comfortable with yourself, that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But then again, I am like that too, so maybe it is.
Yeah. It could be bad depending on who you ask and when, you know, when it's asked.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'm just not there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm in the room, but I'm not there. It's just like, I'm just.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that could be considered, you know, bad in some circles. But
yeah. And then lately I've been on some, like, if somebody hits me with something that I just don't feel like mentally just responding to, or it's just too much for me, and it's just like, all right, I'm not. No.
Yeah.
I'll get back to you.
Right.
And, like, that might be a bad trait, but I have learned to be like, hey, like, I'm going to respond to this when I'm somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm better mentally, or if I do finally respond, I'll be like, my bad. Like when I saw this, I just wasn't mentally in a place to respond properly. And I want to give you a proper response.
Right. Like, you be leaving people hanging a lot.
I do, because I'm most of the time, I don't have the mental capacity to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, now name your good traits.
I did already. Here's my good traits that I feel are good. I don't know how y'all going to take it. It sounds weird to just be like, my good traits are. but I don't know. Like for, as far as the good traits, I feel like that's for people to say. I don't know. I feel like I'm good at, you know, making people laugh. I'm good at, know, being a light for people that, you know, may need it. I don't feel like I'm the best. I feel like I'm a good listener, but only if you write it out. Even if you tell me, like, in person, like, I feel like I'm a good shoulder to cry on. In terms of, you know, if you want to ventilate, I feel like I'm good at, you know, taking in your ventilation and then be like, all right, you know. I try to be mindful of, you know, when Sabrina ventilates to me about something that's unrelated to me, I have a tendency to try to, you know, correct it or just, you know, help out in any way I can. And sometimes that's not really necessary. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, because you know, because one thing about relationships that is frustrating and is when you just sit there and listen, you take it in, you're like, man, that's, you know, you could be a good ear. Then later on down the line, it could be like, yeah, I told you about this and you never did this, this, and the third. Be like, I didn't know I was supposed to, you know. Sometimes we don't know when and when not to try to come in and help. We don't know when to just be an ear or actually step in and do some things. So it's just like that tiptoe it's a tightrope because it's like, you know, we don't know. Because naturally, we don't want to overbear it and be like, why don't you do this, that, and the third? I'm like, I don't need that right now. I just need you to listen. Oh. And so really, before you go in and ventilate, you should kind of just let it be known. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting this off my chest. I don't need any. Yeah. Or be like, might need some help with this. That way, the person you're ventilating to knows how to receive it and take it in.
I feel like we do have a good, like, when we talk about stuff like that. Like the other day, you were like, is that something you want to do? And it was you were, like, ready to go. Yeah. And I was like, no, not right now. Right. You know what I mean? And, like, we're good at that. But, like, there are times where I'm like, okay, I'm about to tell him this. He's going to want to say something. He's going to want to react. Mm-hmm. I got to make sure not to, like, I got to make sure to set it up. So, like.
Right.
Because, you know, there's certain people that when I bring them up, I'm like, man, they still annoy me.
Yeah.
Don't say nothing, though. you know what I mean?
I'll just be ready to handle it, like, you know. Especially if it's a reoccurring issue.
Yeah.
It's just like, because, like, for me, example, like, you know, depending on who it is, if it's a reoccurring issue, I'm out. Like, I'm just, you know, we ain't that tight anyway. you know what I mean? Just be out, you know, but. Another good trait of mine is I feel like I'm good at making people feel comfortable. I feel like I'm good at, you know, empowering people to go for their dreams or what they're interested in or, you know, pursue passions or whatever. I feel like I'm a good cheerleader on that front where it's just like, you know, I like to call it breathing life into people sometimes where it's just like, you know, I'm here for it. Like, you know, if you want to attain these things, yes. Yeah, you should. You know, I feel like I'm good at that. I like for people to feel included and not feel left out or oddballed out. When it comes to fatherhood, I feel like I'm good at listening to my children. And not just being overbearing with it. I was overbearing at a point in time when it came to sports. It was something petty. It was something lightweight. But it was still me being overbearing. And, you know, I was mindful of that. and, you know, adjusted myself and apologized. But, you know, there was that thing. I feel like I'm a fairly good communicator as well. Like, if I don't like something or if I'm unhappy with something, I feel like I'm good at letting it be known. Sometimes my delivery may be a little bit too harsh, but I feel like I'm just good at letting you know where I stand. I feel like I'm very vocal about what I don't like when it comes to how you treat me or talk to me or bring to me. I feel like everybody knows my dislikes, and I get frustrated when people try to deem themselves special to where it's like, you know, I know you don't like this, but for me, you're going to do this.
Yeah,
that's not going to work. It's, and then people want to feel like, well, I'm this, so why I got to be treated like everybody else? Because that's how I'm set up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just don't like it when people, I don't like to feel finessed by people. Like little mental games and little mental finesses. I don't like hints and clues and, you know, I like straightforward shit. But anyway, I don't know.
Just facts.
Kiyomi asks, what made the biggest impact on you growing as a comedian? I could tell you right now, the biggest impact on me as a comedian is hosting Crack 'Em Up Thursdays at the Comedy Store every Thursday night. That right there, shout out to Nichelle Murdoch, who, first of all, Nichelle believed in me early on, before anything. She saw something in me, and she was like, yo, I want to manage him. And, you know, I want him to host a show that I've been working on. And side note, Miranda Cummings, that's a fact. When I met you at Arlington Improv, I was so geeked to meet you in D.C. You two made me feel so at ease. Miranda, that's one thing about me that I hope is conveyed when you meet me is that you feel appreciated and you feel that I'm excited, that you're excited about me. Like, you know, one thing I try to present at all times, if you're a fan, I want you to feel good about being a fan of me. I want you to feel the energy you giving me. I want to give you that energy right back. And so I hope that anybody that has ever met me in person, I hope you feel that. Even though sometimes I can be overwhelmed and I kind of hide now because, you know, I'm emotionally fragile now. When you do see me, I'm going to give you something. You know what I mean? Like, even now, like, at the comedy clubs, like, you know, if I'm coming to the comedy club and people are in line to see me and they see me sneaking into the green room, they're like, Tony Baker, I'm going to give you something. I can't just ignore you or brush you off. I just can't do it. So I hope you feel that your fandom is appreciated and loved, and I want to give you that same energy. But yes, hosting that Crack 'Em Up Thursday show every Thursday is the single most beneficial tool to my stand-up career because it gave me constant stage time. I'm hosting the show, so now I'm working on my improv skills. I'm working on my crowd work. I'm working on my bits. I'm working on my material. I'm working on how to change the energy in the room. I'm working on so many different things on a weekly basis. This made me so strong as a comedian. And I tell comedians all the time, hosting a show is so beneficial to any comedian because it makes you so much stronger. So that's for sure, Kiyomi, is the thing that impacted me as a comedian the most, right there. So then when it is crunch time, when I am doing the TV taping, when I am on tour, whatever, I can dip into my bag of, you know, hosting the show for 3 years. I can dip into that bag and be successful on stage for the most part. I wanted to get into this before I do the Batman review. The Kanye documentary, I don't know if y'all have been watching it. I don't know if y'all have seen it. The Yeezus documentary is 3 episodes. I watched it all. As a documentary, I had a really good time watching it. The first 2 episodes and the beginning of the 3rd episode were really strong. And then when I feel like Kanye got later into his career, it wasn't as compelling as the early parts of his career and him trying to make it and him trying to get started. I feel like the earlier parts of his career up until his mom passed, it was a better watch for me. Because after that, it kind of became just like, you know, the documentary director, Cody? I don't know how to say his name.
It's a D, though, or something like that. Or...
Cody, I'm fucking it up. Yeah, it's still on Netflix. After that, after his mom passed.
Oh, Cootie and Cheek.
Cootie and Cheek. Cootie, my bad, Cootie. I feel like there was an obvious disconnect between Cootie and Kanye the bigger he got. So now the documentary really became us watching Kanye do these epic things, and that's cool, but I just feel like there was a distance created. When Kanye blew up, he kind of distanced himself from Cootie. And so, you know, so the documentary didn't feel the same. And that was one thing I noticed about Kanye was when Kanye was trying to make it, when he was trying to convince Rockefeller, like, yo, man, I'm dope. My talent, I got the talent out here, man. Y'all need to sign me, this, that, and the third. Kanye was always fighting to prove himself, prove his worth, prove his talent, while also being confident in his talent, but feeling the need to prove it and wanting to impress Jay-Z and Dame and, like, you know, impress. And then once he blew up musically, he wanted to impress the fashion world and the art world. And he was always fighting to be seen and heard and felt and respected. All the while overlooking those that believed in him from day one. And that's where I just noticed that trait in him. Like, after he blew up, when the College Dropout, you know, exploded, there was no reason for him to distance himself from Cootie. Like, why was there a distance after he finally attained what he was striving for? Like, Cootie believed in Kanye from day one. He quit his stand-up career to follow Kanye around with a camera before, you know, Kanye got the deal. Let's do this documentary. That's showing you that Cootie believed in him before Rockefeller even believed in him. So it's just like, I noticed, like, man, that's kind of messed up how you kind of dip out on the people that were there for you from day one. Now that you have attained, you know, what you were fighting for, and you kind of neglect the people that were already in your corner. And, you know, so I noticed that. And as a conjunction with, you know, when Kanye was on Drink Champs and he disrespected Talib Kweli and Backpack Rappers, I was just like, yo, man, these cats embraced you early on before Rockefeller even would give you a real chance. I'm just like, yo, man, these cats embraced you. They gave you stage time. They were throwing you up on their concerts. And then to disrespect Talib on Drink Champs and laughing at him, and I feel like that's kind of messed up. Because, and I noticed that trait in different people. Like, they fight for the attention of, you know, others. Like, they seeking it out, mind neglecting the people that are already there for you. Like, you know people. People like, man, you know, why don't they ever invite me to this, that, and the third? Meanwhile, There's a friend that's been inviting you to mad stuff, and you just ignoring them or just not showing up for them, but you're seeking, you know, I want this friendship. I want them to respect me. I want this, that, and the third, while you keep overlooking the people that are there for you consistently, no matter what. And I was just noticing that. I was just like, wow. And, you know, there are people do that a lot. Like, you know, I want this, I want that. I want them to notice. How come they ain't giving me props over here? How come I'm not getting invited to this or this person? Meanwhile, their friends have been like, well, you know, it is messed up. We having this over here. You can come if you want. I can't make it, or, you know, or just brush it off completely. And it's just like, why do we do that? Why do we always go for the people that keep shading us or don't see our true value or don't see our true worth? We always fight for the person we have to fight to prove it to. Like, I don't know why that's a thing. And I know, you know, and I know people fight for, you know, they always highlight the negative, or they highlight people that aren't laughing or aren't clapping or aren't applauding or aren't reposting or aren't inviting. And then meanwhile, you're overlooking your true friends and your true believers and your true, like, people that really took you on. So that was something I noticed with Kanye, because even when he brought Cootie back for, like, the footage, it just wasn't the same energy. It wasn't the same vibes. It was like, and then I was wondering, like, when Cootie highlighted his dad passing away, and, like, you know, I was wondering, like, was Kanye even there for his dad passing away? Did he come to the funeral? Did he reach out to you? It was like, you know, because I know when Donda West passed away, you can tell Cootie was like, man, you know, you could just feel, as the director of the documentary, you could feel his love for Donda West, you know. And so I was wondering, was Kanye still extending that same love and care to Cootie? On the other hand, somebody that was there from jump. And so I just found that interesting. I was just like, man, you know, he overlooking cats that was there for him from jump. And so it was just like, man, that was pretty glaring. And I was just thinking about it. And I was just thinking about, you know, people I know that are always like, you know, striving to, you know, I'll be like, focus on the people that are consistently there for you. Even though they might not seem as cool, or, you know, they might not be your targets. They're there for you. They love you. They're thinking of you. They're more thoughtful. Focus on that, you know, and stop trying to fight for the people that, you know, are overlooking you. If you overlook me, all right, y'all just don't see me then. Move on. Focus on those people that really rock with you, that have been there, that show up. Yeah, and then I was watching The Worst Roommate Ever on Netflix. That show is wild. I didn't know that you can just pretty much move into somebody's crib, not pay rent, and then you can't kick them out. You have to go through this whole process of actually getting evicted.
Squatters' rights.
Squatters' rights are so disrespectful, and I can't believe they exist. Because I feel like some landlords are shady.
Yes.
But the fact that this man can just come in somebody's house that was looking for a roommate, not pay the rent, and then they got to go through all this red tape to get them out. These are women that We're living with a man that's bigger than them, that's physically intimidating these women, and you can't kick me out. Getting in these women's faces, they can't kick him out. And I'm just like, my mind is blown here. I'm just like, that's the wackest shit of all time. I thought if you didn't pay the rent, get your ass up out of here. But no, you got the squatter's rights. It's going to be 3 months before you can get rid of me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yo, this is some scary shit. So if you haven't seen it, the last episode is this dude, they split his story up into two episodes. And so he is literally like moving in. And the victims on this show were all women. So he's moving in with these women. He took this one lady's cats. He took this one lady's cats with him. Brought up some fake charges on her, said that she attacked him with a knife. They believe that they threw her in jail. Mm-mm. She can't go back to her own apartment because he got a distance order or whatever. She can't even go get her cats. She had one cat that needed regular medical attention. He took the cat to get euthanized and took the other two cats. And when she was like giving the interview, she was just like, she broke down in that moment. She was just like, I feel like I failed to. The cat was just like, yo, how is this even humanly possible? This shit blew my mind. I still got to finish the last episode, but I'm like, this dude. And it's funny because if you do put hands on him, you fight him, he gonna run to the police and get to the police first. Now it's your story against his. And I'm just like, yo, this is wild business. And I never knew this mess was going on. Blew my head off. Yeah. I was just like, man, you moving in, you're not paying no rent, you're not contributing. This one lady lost her house because of him. Like she bought an apartment in Far Rockaway that she loved. It was the first thing she ever owned. And because he wasn't paying his side of the rent, and he done fucked up her life so much, she had to foreclose the house. And she was never able to get back financially. I was just like, bro, this dude, I was just in awe. It's just scary, man. So if you got somebody living with you that ain't contributing, ease them out, man. Because that's jacked up for one. And then...
But also, wow. If you have a really trash landlord, because I went through this, mm-hmm. that tries to raise your rent over the legal limit, it's exactly what I did, use your squatter's rights. Yeah.
If you're getting played on that, absolutely. Yeah,
because he had to pay me to leave.
Yeah.
So,
and you was paying your rent.
Yeah. And so it's like you, nah. And and everybody else who wasn't, like, so it was like a roommate situation. It was a bunch of people who... I rented a room and they weren't from New York, so they don't know, like, the percentage is like 5%, I think now. Mm. But this dude was trying to raise the rent over 13. It was like 13%. It was insane.
Yeah.
And they all left. They're like, oh, well, I guess I'm like, wait, what? Wait, hold on. I need y'all. This is illegal. Like, if this is what he wants to do, he has to pay us to leave.
Yeah.
And no, you know, they were just scared. And I was just like, nah.
You stay.
Yeah. And it was a lot. I went through a lot. I remember one time coming home to a dude in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge dude. Mm. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, the owner of the building told me to do security on this apartment or whatever. Because apparently, like, and this story he was told, and I was like, yeah, you're security for me.
Yeah.
Like, this is my apartment, and I told him the situation, and he's like, nah, that's fucked up. Like,
yeah.
And he left. He's like, I'll just call him in the morning. I was like, I bet. And so the guy comes in the morning, and I already told the station, the police station down the block, of the situation, because one of the officers I went to middle school and high school with, and so he was already he already knew what was going on. So when they called the cops on me to try to, like, when the landlord tried to call the cops on me to, like, yo, get her out, she's here illegally, I was like, no, bro, you're trying to kick me out illegally. Like,
yeah,
you're gonna have to, like, I know my shit. I talked to every lawyer, every, like, you know, I was doing my research,
right?
So the cops came. And he, you know, he was like, oh, like, trying to give his side of the story to make it real dramatic. And so I come out and I explain what happened. And they're like, okay, what's your name? Oh, wait, Castro. Oh, wait. Oh, you're Officer Gill's friend? I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, they told me about, hold on. And they turned around and chewed out the landlord. And, like, you're going to have to pay her. Like, this is illegal. You know, real New York women. And, like, no, you're gonna have to pay, she's a female, how you gonna put her in the streets, da 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 da,
right.
And they're like, no, this is unfair. So he wrote me a fake check. I knew he wrote me a fake check, so I was like, all right, this, you think this is cute, whatever. Eventually I got the money.
Yeah,
but he really tried to play me. And
how
I
long
do...
this process take?
It was a few months. Nah, it was like 2 months.
2 months, okay.
Yeah.
They say it takes 3 months to evict somebody.
I didn't want to go the legal way. I was like, bro, I know you don't want to spend money on like lawyers and this, that, and the third. And like, I just gave him a price. I was like, you give me this much money, I'll be out your hair.
How much you give?
It was 10,000.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because I was just give me this much for the rest of the year. And he's like, all right. Then faked it with the fake check. And then I was like, bro, I already know this is fake, but I'm gonna let you.
How much he fake it with? It was
the 10.
Okay. But he actually paid the 10 eventually.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know this is fake, but I'm gonna go to the bank with it. And
yeah.
And you're gonna think it's cute or whatever. And he tried to change the locks on me one day when I was out. And I left the back door open. It was a Brooklyn apartment, by the way, y'all, in Bushwick, and we had a backyard. And so I snuck back in to the house. So this guy at this point is like, I cannot get rid of Mm-hmm. I was like, no. Like, unless you want to go to the courts, and I don't feel like doing that. And right. I know you don't feel like doing that because you know you're going to lose. And he knew he was going to lose because it was illegal. And then finally, he was just like, here's the money in cash. And I was like, all right, I'll be at your head. I was packed the whole time. Yeah. I was ready to go. I was like, sweetheart, I'm ready to go. Just you either pay me to leave or, you know, you're probably going to end up owing me more if we go to the courts.
Was he old?
He was an old Hasidic Jewish guy because they own most of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I went through all of that. So I did use my squatter rights in that. Not legally, but I brought up a lot of legal words.
Flex the muscle.
I was like.
In that regard, squatter's rights is legit.
Yeah. Yeah, fake check. Like, he wrote the check and then canceled it. And I was
dirty
just like.
Dirty bastard.
I was like, all right. I know this is fake.
Dirty bastard.
But I'm a let you think that you got one over on me. Mm. And when he saw that the cops was like knew about the situation and was on my side, he was like, damn it.
Damn it. She's more formidable than I imagined.
And so he hired the security dude. You could tell that it's somebody that would scare him.
Yeah.
But I was just like, this, what the hell are you doing? Like, I might be small, but this guy doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
Because he was like a 7 foot tall, huge dude. It was just like, I was like, I'm not scared, buddy. Yeah. Like, I know that I'm good. So, the name of the Netflix special that Tony was talking about was Worst Roommate Ever.
Yeah. That's in the top 10 right now on Netflix. So check it out. And that was just the bad. One roommate was killing people that stayed with her in Sacramento. Another roommate ended up killing his roommate, which I saw this story on Dateline. He was a man that ended up killing his roommate. And then it was another episode where this dude was swindling money from people because he was getting money to like run for Palestine and this, that, and the third. So he was swindling money that way. And then, hell yeah. Wait, what's going on? They having technical difficulties?
Well, a lot of them are saying that the internet is...
Internet tripping.
But it... Oh. Are y'all good?
We having problems. For those of y'all listening to the show, Patron Saints having problems with the visuals. In closing, y'all, let me do this review for The Batman. So, The Batman is the latest Batman movie to hit the streets, directed by Matt Reeves, who is responsible for reinvigorating the Planet of the Apes, mythology and franchise and all that good stuff. Matt Reeves, I'm going to dig up his filmography real quick. Matt Reeves, The Batman. No spoilers. There will be no spoilers. Okay, guys? So Matt Reeves, as a director, this is his filmography. He directed 5 episodes of Felicity. I don't know if anybody watched that show. Cloverfield, he directed that. He directed Let Me In, which is a remake of this movie called Let the Right One In, which is actually one of my favorite vampire movies. He directed Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, War of the Planet of the Apes. So he didn't do the initial Planet of the Apes with James Franco. He didn't direct that one. But he directed the following two, which in my opinion were dope. Like I really like those last 3 Planet of the Apes movies were dope. And then now he's got The Batman. The Batman. We got Robert Pattinson as Batman. A lot of people, when they first heard about this, they were like, man, man, look out, man. You know what I'm saying? Robert Pattinson, Edward from Twilight, man, look out, man. Hey, man, why? Man, get off me, man. You know what I'm saying? Robert Pattinson, man, get this out of here, man. A lot of people wasn't happy with it. But then they were like, you know what I'm saying? Give him a chance. He's got the acting chops. You know what I'm saying? I was like, he could surprise us. Every time when we hear about people getting cast, we don't always agree. You got to give people a chance to, prove themselves. The Batman, when the Riddler, a sadistic serial killer, begins murdering key political figures in Gotham, Batman is forced to investigate the city's hidden corruption and question his family's involvement. That's what this Batman is about. This Batman is set early in Batman's career. Okay, this is like year two he's been Batman. So this is his second year being Batman. Robert Pattinson plays Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. Batman. So, you know, they're gonna go for a little younger look. And when you think of Robert Pattinson, you think of Twilight, maybe a younger guy, even though he's a full-grown man. I'm not sure how old Robert Pattinson is, but, you know, when you think about him, you're thinking younger, just off the rip. Robert Pattinson, let me see. So he was born in 86. So Robert Pattinson is in his 30s, but he's got that boyish, mannish, you know. I said this on stage the other day. I was like, man, Robert Pattinson outside the bat suit, I did not like the way he looked in this movie. I know he's young. I know it's year two, but him in that hair, the little stringy emo hair, and the way he was talking to Alfred, like, man, you're not my father. It was just like, he didn't say it like that, but the hair made me think of this. Mm-hmm. Get out of my room, Alfred. That was the vibe. But I was feeling like, you know, Robert Pattinson gave it a bat guy vibe, like bat guy rather than man. Bat guy, you know. But again, it's early Batman. You know, he had just hit the streets. The film opens up where, you know, he's just getting started, but he's building the rep. Like, they know him. They know the Batman. The crooks are scared. They know Batman is out here scaring the criminals and putting hands on people and stuff like that. And, like, you know, so, and, you know, Gordon is already rocking with Batman. So this particular Batman movie was the most detective-y Batman movie I've ever seen. Like, this was Seven. This was like putting Batman in the movie Seven for me. Like, it was mad detective work, police work. He was working very closely with Jim Gordon, who wasn't a commissioner yet. So, to me, this felt very detective-like. It was just like, you know, he was showing up to the crime scenes. The cops was like, hey, man, get Batman out of here, man. He in the crime scene. Gordon was like, nah, man, he good. I love the way they made Gotham City look. It was dark. It was dank. The Gotham City you expect. It felt very gritty, very dark, very urban, very, you know, cluttered. It was just like, man, they created a dope Gotham City. I like the vibe of the whole city. I like the cinematography. You know, the fight choreography was legit. It wasn't as jerky as the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. But none of the fight scenes gave me the adrenaline that when Ben Affleck was Batman in Batman versus Superman and he went to save Superman's mom, there's still not a Batman fight scene that has topped that, in my personal opinion. The Batman is no exception. But the Batman fight scenes are pretty good. They're pretty solid. I feel like they were easier to view and take in than the Christopher Nolan Batmans, who was doing a lot of jerky camera movements. And, you know, Batman always had his elbow up in the fight scenes on the Christopher Nolan. He's always doing this. It's very elbowy. Batman was very elbowy in the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. But the detective aspect in this Batman made this movie feel fresh to me. Jeffrey Wright as Gordon. Jeffrey Wright is Jeffrey Wright. He's always going to deliver.
100%.
He's always going to be a welcome presence. You know, Jeffrey Wright is that dude. He can do no wrong. Even though it was this one particular movie where I didn't really feel him in this particular movie. I forget the name of it. It was a Netflix joint where he was like an ex-con and he was raising his son. And his son was played by the dude that was in the Wu-Tang joint that plays the RZA. And he was in you know, Twilight. I didn't really like Jeffrey Wright in that, but everything else Jeffrey Wright is in, All In, and Jeffrey Wright in the Batman is a dope Gordon. And remember, they're young. So, you know, Selena Kyle, played by Zoe Kravitz, is also young. She's just getting into her, you know, Catwoman status and vibe, you know what I mean? And I like Zoe Kravitz as Selena Kyle. Like, it was just, she had, to me, Catwoman was layered in this movie. She wasn't just some, you know, scarred woman. You know, there were still layers that we could still pull back on Selena Kyle, but, you know, she was pulling back the layers as the movie went on, and, you know, she was three-dimensional as Selena Kyle. And, like, she was sexy, like, she visually sexy, but also she didn't force the sexiness on us. It was like she was visually stunning, sexy, but it never felt forced. It still felt like she was someone underneath all of that, and I could feel that. And I was just like, all right, Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman, I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that right there. And I liked the dynamic between her and Batman. It was like a good dynamic. Paul Dano as the Riddler did a great job. He did a great job. He wasn't some campy, ridiculous Jim Carrey as the Riddler. They went away from that. A big smiley, just like, yeah, the riddles. He had the riddles going, but it was more so on a cerebral level, like, figure this out. I got the plans going, the mystery of it all. This wasn't some hulking brute like Bane. This was just somebody that's going to outsmart you, but also can do things to you physically. The breathing, the way he sounded in the mask, the way he talked, it was like, you know, he was hiding his voice. It was just like, all right, I'm going to get you on an intellectual level, Batman. I want you in on this. I'm leaving you clues. And it was very much a detective story. And Colin Farrell was just amazing as the Penguin. Like, you know, he was unrecognizable, but he gave the proceedings some light, some levity, some bounce. Like, the Penguin was a funny character. Like, the mob element was there, and John Turturro was in it, and they did a good job giving us that mob guy element that I also like to see in the Batman aesthetic. And I feel like Colin Farrell did an amazing job as well, and I like to see, you know, more of these cats going forward. So I feel like on the direct, I didn't like the third act. The final climax of the movie was where I felt like there was probably the weakest link. It just didn't really flow with the rest of the film. It wasn't horrible, but it just didn't flow with the rest of the film. It felt like they switched gears on us at the very end, and I don't know if I really embraced that fully. I get it. They had to raise the stakes and, like, you know, make everything more amped up and, like, you know, we got to raise the stakes. But I just felt like it didn't really match the tone of the rest of the film for me. And I feel like Zoe Kravitz was a better Catwoman than Anne Hathaway. You feel the same, Sabrina?
Oh my God. Anne Hathaway's too adorable.
Anne Hathaway.
She's too cute to be.
She was cute, adorable. She brought an intelligence to the mm-hmm. role, but I never felt seduction.
Yeah.
I never feel seduction.
I look at Zoe's face and I'm like, I'm ready. What are we doing?
Zoe could just look at us all and we'd be like,
yep.
You know, you're doing the collar adjustment. Male, female. You're going to be like, mm-hmm, so. Yeah,
non-binary.
So what's going on? What are we? You're just going to go up to Zoe Kravitz and be like, so what are we?
Oh, if I ever run into her in the street, you best believe I'm going to be like, listen, me and my boyfriend ain't that serious. As a matter of fact, he good with it.
So what are we?
So what are we?
Yeah, I'll be like, yeah, what are y'all? I'm on the side.
She just cheering me on.
Zoe Kravitz's parents did their job,
bro,
in creating a great face.
Shout out to them.
Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet, y'all did that. Y'all set it up. Man. Y'all did this on purpose.
Oh, because the both of them on their own individually.
You already knew. They coming in face first. You already knew. Them two together creating a face.
It's insane.
You can't lose. And Zoe's face is just like, man, goddamn, man. Okay. We get it, face. We get it. So I feel like, you know, that was a great casting choice. And the way she would talk to Batman and just look at him and stuff like that, it was just like, it was dope. It was a vibe. It was like an attraction, but it didn't feel, she didn't camp it up in any way. It was just like, yo, so what you trying to do after this, man? It was just like a dope tone was set. And remember, they're young, too. We got to keep that in mind. They're young. So it was just like, all right. So I feel like the casting was great. Although I didn't really feel Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne. I didn't really connect with him as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
no. I just didn't feel, and I know he's young, he probably hasn't, because he really, in the movie, he's really bucking against Bruce Wayne. Like, he doesn't want to be Bruce Wayne. He doesn't want to be that guy. I'm not interested in being Bruce Wayne. I'm not interested in being this billionaire, playboy, philanthropist. I'm not interested in this. I want to stop crime in Gotham City. I want to solve cases. I want to protect people. So when I'm out of the costume, I'm not feeling this. So it was just like, I get that, Batman. I get that. That's part of your mystique. That's part of your whole thing. But when he was out of costume, I was just like, all right, man, you know what I'm saying? Get the costume back on. When Michael Keaton was out of costume, I didn't mind it. Because I liked him as Bruce Wayne. I liked Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne. I liked him as Batman and Bruce Wayne. Christian Bale, you know, he was cool as Bruce Wayne. And then he talked annoyingly as Batman, trying to disguise his voice. You know what I mean? I liked Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne. And I liked him as Batman. You know, I like the way his voice was modified when he was in the costume. And I like his size. I like his stature. And I like Batman's costume when Ben Affleck was Batman. And then Val Kilmer brought nothing to Batman. He brought absolutely nothing. He brought absolutely nothing. To me, even though George Clooney gets the bad rap of being the worst Batman, at least he wasn't boring. That movie was horrible. Batman and Robin was horrible. That's not all George Clooney's fault. There was nobody that could save Batman and Robin. You could have put Daniel Day-Lewis in that goddamn bat costume. It would have been horrible. Denzel could have been Batman. It would have been a horrible movie. There was no saving it. Visually, from a writing standpoint, the campiness of it, it was dead in the water. So it wasn't on George Clooney. But at least George Clooney has some type of charisma and personality to him. Val Kilmer brought nothing. And we know Val Kilmer is capable of charm. Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday is one of the best movie characters of all time. But him as Batman, snooze fest. In my opinion, Val Kilmer is the worst Batman. Did George Clooney right above him, but, you know. So I said all that to say this. I like Robert Pattinson as the Batman. As Bruce Wayne, he was all right. You know what I'm saying? But forget all that. Y'all want to know the smooth jazz review of the Batman. Well, here it is. Oh, yeah. I'm giving the Batman 4 saxophones out of 5. Yeah. I kind of want to see the Batman again so I can pick up on pieces I may have missed. And I like the way it looked. It was a good film to look at. So, yeah, I like that. I like that aspect of it. What you giving it?
Out of 5?
Yeah. How many saxophones you giving the Batman?
I would give it 4.
Okay.
I love the first 2 halves of that movie. I love it. And you know why. The storyline was great.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 4.
Amir, did you see it? Oh, Amir didn't see it yet.
Yeah. Do you think that Alicia Silverstone would have made a better Catwoman?
No.
I mean,
as opposed to being Batgirl?
Yeah.
No.
You don't think she would have brought sexier than what's her name? Anne?
Alicia Silverstone is adorable.
She's adorable, I think she can tap into sexiness because of Aerosmith videos. She was mad sexy in those videos. I
forgot about those videos.
She was mad sexy. She can tap into it. That's why I'm like.
The only thing, though, was her age. That would have just felt weird.
Okay.
Because she was, I don't know, she might have been a grown woman. She's coming off of Clueless. Because you got to keep in mind, she was Batgirl in like 97.
Mm. And I'm comparing to Anne Hathaway, not Zoe or anything. I just mean over Anne Hathaway.
I feel like Alicia Silverstone is Catwoman. Catwoman needs to have a dark sexiness to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really feel that from Alicia Silverstone.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's got to be like a smoky, just a dark, something.
I get it.
Yeah, so
I know exactly what you're trying to say.
Yeah, because, you know, I grew up, you know, my introduction to Catwoman was actually Eartha Kitt.
Mm.
Even more so than the comics. Yeah. So he's like, oh, okay. And so that was my intro to her.
She is Catwoman.
She was Catwoman, you know, from the, you know. And then, you know, I read the comic books. And then the Halle Berry thing was disastrous. So, you know, but that's more so due to the writing and the plot and all that. And we all know Halle Berry is gorgeous, but it was just, that movie failed on all fronts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was just like, yeah, let's just forget that shit ever happened.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And again, Anne Hathaway was an interesting character, but it was just her as Catwoman just never really felt like, it just never felt right. And I like Anne Hathaway as an actress and as a person because, you know, she be speaking up when we as blacks be out here pissed off, she be right with us.
With her eyeballs.
With her big eyes. She got huge eyes. I like her eyes. But, you know, as a person, as a human being, and as an actress, she's super talented, super dope. But I just don't feel like Catwoman was the right role for her in the Christopher Nolan joint.
What about Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy?
Oh, my gosh. She was horrible. Uma Thurman was horrible as Poison Ivy, man. Mind you, I rewatched all the Batmans fairly recently, like last year. Uma Thurman was dreadful as Poison Ivy. The one credit I give to Batman and Robin, Mr. Freeze looked amazing.
Oh, looked?
The way Mr. Freeze looked?
Yes.
Amazing. 100%. When he was in the costume, even when he was out of the costume, Arnold Schwarzenegger looked amazing as Mr. Freeze.
This is facts.
Just the shit he was saying was just absolute garbage.
Yeah, it was very cringy.
Visually, they did the costume department and the makeup department did their damn thing with Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
That's one of the highlights of Batman and Robin. They made that look, even when he froze people, it looked dope.
Yeah.
But
I visually like that movie because especially when like you look at it from like childlike eyes and you don't even have to be a child, you just have childlike eyes and imagination. It's just like, wow, this is pretty fucking cool.
Right.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
It's colorful.
It's colorful, vibrant.
It's dope. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a comic book in the colorful aspect.
Right.
But when you break down the artistry of it, it's like,
yeah.
Ugh.
Let me tell you what they did get right as far as casting with the Batman franchises.
What?
Michael Keaton is Batman. Even though people hated it initially, when we saw it, it was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton's great, by the way.
Yeah. Because people was pissed. When he first got cast, people was pissed.
Mm-hmm.
They was like, Beetlejuice? No. No. It was hot.
That's so weird because I feel like he's not even Beetlejuice, even though he's Beetlejuice. Right. I don't even associate. That's not the first thing.
He did such a good job. It was just like it wasn't him.
Yeah, it didn't even feel like him.
Shoot,
they're coming out with another Beetlejuice.
Yes.
I'm
skeptical, but yes.
I'm here for it.
Beetlejuice is one of the most inventive movies I can think of.
Insane.
It was just like the storyline. I was just like, what?
It's whoever, like the idea, bless that imagination.
Yeah.
Because
it's great, great premise, great story, and great cast.
Yes.
Gina Davis was adorable with her little dimples. Alec Baldwin was adorable in that movie. It was like a different Alec Baldwin.
That I don't even associate today's Alec with that Alec.
Yeah.
It's so everybody in that movie, I don't even associate them with who they are today. Well, I guess Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder, she hung on to it for a while.
She was that person for a while, yeah. But everybody else is just like, bro. Yep.
Beetlejuice is dope.
So good.
So Michael Keaton's a good cast.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Nicholson, of course, is the Joker. Kill that shit. I liked Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman was dope. She did a great job. Christopher Walken was great in Batman Returns. Danny DeVito was gross as the Penguin, but he was great.
Killed it.
He killed it. Tommy Lee Jones is Two-Face, trash.
Who the hell is Tommy Lee Jones?
Oh, I'm sure he's still working. He always in something. Mm. He was just in the commercial during the Super Bowl with Leslie Jones, and they was in them trucks. Keeping Up with the Joneses was the thing.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't see that.
So he was, Jim Carrey was over the top as the Riddler, but I didn't hate him as the Riddler. Mm-hmm. But, I was just like, but I didn't hate him as the Riddler, but he was doing the most. But that's what they kind of set up for that movie. Val Kilmer as Batman was trash. Nicole Kidman as the love interest was boring in Batman Forever. Mm-hmm. Chris O'Donnell as Robin was okay.
Yeah, that was, all right. You know what I mean? I didn't hate it.
I wasn't mad at it.
And I was like, okay, oh, he's cute.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. He had that youthful energy and he did what he could with Robin. So I'm not mad at that.
He did what he could.
Yeah.
Which is the key.
Yeah.
Because that the rest of the movie around him.
Shit show.
But he did, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did it. Not mad at him. So they already talked about Batman and Robin. So then we get to, you know, Christopher Nolan. Christian Bale is Batman. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked him as Bruce Wayne. I liked him as Bruce Wayne quite a bit.
It was believable.
Yeah, it was. And when he had to turn on the Bruce Wayne charm, they would show him doing that.
You never answered the question.
Oh.
So there's a tweet that said, Robert Pattinson can play Batman, but Christian Bale can never be Edward Cullen. Do you think Christian Bale could have pulled off Edward Cullen?
He's too old, man. It's like, to me, like Twilight, I'm just looking at it from a teeny perspective.
But, well, think about young Christian Bale. Do you think he would have been able to do it?
Okay, because young Christian Bale, to me, is Empire of the Sun, but he was literally a kid in that movie.
Oh. What about American Psycho? How old was he in that?
He was a grown man then. And he looked like a grown man. I don't think he could have pulled off Edward Cullen because I can't really see Christian Bale as a heartthrob.
He's got heartthrob looks.
But I've never seen it. Okay. Like, I'm not saying he's ugly, but I've just never seen him as the love interest, the guy. You know what I mean? And since I've never seen that, it's hard for me to picture that. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Because every movie he's been in, it's like the love, the romance is just an afterthought
for
his characters. So it's just like, I don't know. And I'm not sitting up here calling him like, you know, a hideous man or anything like that.
I mean,
that's Christian Bale back in the day?
Yeah, I looked up Christian Bale young. He's giving me Vampire. He's giving me young was it Tiger Beat?
And then one thing y'all have to consider too about Christian Bale, he has kind of a asshole face.
He does have an asshole face.
So I feel like to be a heartthrob, you can't really have that asshole face.
I definitely wouldn't say hi to him if I saw him in the street.
Yeah, he looked like he ain't with it.
I would tell people afterwards, like, I saw Christian Bale. Why didn't you say hi? Because he looked like an asshole.
Right. So it's kind of tough, you know. Because, you know, Robert Pattinson, he has vulnerability in his face and, like, you know, stuff like that. So, I don't know if he could pull off Edward Cullen. From an acting standpoint, he's incredible. He's one of the best actors working today. Mm-hmm. So he probably could pull off Edward Cullen, but
I'm
just going pure visual.
Yeah.
Thought he was a good Batman, great Bruce Wayne. Morgan Freeman as Lucius Fox was incredible in the Nolan Batman. Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul was dope. Cillian Murphy as the Scarecrow, dope. Heath Ledger as Joker, dope. Michael Caine as Alfred, dope.
I love Michael Caine.
Oh, Michael Caine is
just—he's another person that when I see him, him and Andy Serkis, I'm like, oh,
Andy Serkis is Alfred, dope. Who was Gary Oldman as Gordon, dope.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name right now. Tom Hardy as Bane, dope. Even though he's damn near unrecognizable voice-wise and visually.
Yeah.
He was dope as Bane. Marie Cotoire as Ra's al Ghul's daughter. Even though I think she's a dope actress, she didn't really bring it. She didn't really bring anything. She could have been replaced. So I'm going to go no on her, even though I think she's a dope actress. Great, great eyes and a great face. But nah, on that. Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a potential Robin. Dope. Christopher Nolan didn't really miss a lot in terms of casting. Except for, you know, Anne Hathaway as Catwoman and, you know, Jeffrey Wright as Gordon was dope. So,
yeah.
And I like Ben Affleck as Batman too. I liked him as Bruce Wayne. I liked him, and I'm gonna keep saying it till they top it. The Batman fight scene where he goes to save Superman's mom is still, to me, the best Batman fight scene on film. I know the Bane fight carried a lot more weight, a lot more dramatic weight. But as far as fight choreography, that Batman fight scene and Batman v Superman was just fire. Anyway, y'all let me know what you thought in the comment section below. Let me know how you felt about the Batman. Let me know in the comment section below. Who is your favorite Batman and who is your least favorite Batman? Let me know in the comment section below, man. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe and share with your people. You know what I mean? Marlon Wayans was going to be Robin. That would have been interesting to see. He was all set, too. But, yeah. Anyway, y'all, we got to get the hell up out of here. We are 1 hour and 33 minutes in. I want to thank my patron saints for being in here, for pulling up, for joining us, for having a good time, for supporting. I love y'all passionately in the shower. You know this. Shout out to Sabrina, producer extraordinaire. Even though Amir was quiet this episode, shout out to Amir on the ones and twos. And thank y'all for great questions, and keep the questions coming. And if I missed a question here, we'll tackle it on another episode.
Yeah, I'm going to start keeping the questions.
Yeah. So, y'all, you do some time stamping?
I did.
Yes.
The whole look at this.
Yeah, we got time stamps, y'all. Oh, thank you so much.
How you doing?
Can you send those to Amir?
No.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, y'all. We out of here. I want y'all to have a great week. Spread the word about Verbal Cardio, man.
Please.
You know, we the little engine that could out here, man. Pull up, man. Share. All right, y'all. We out.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.